Welcome to this episode of the Down the Pole podcast. On this episode, we are doing our season preview. So we're going to go through each club. We're not going to spend 4 million years on each one. It's kind of like a 5, 6 minute little run through of the changes and how we think they're going to probably fare this year. Probably next week, we might do up our season predictions. So I'm going to be looking after York and Valor. Chris Sterrell's with us again. Chris is probably going to be with us for the season, to be honest. So, Chris, who are you? Who are you going to be taking care of?
Looking at Ottawa, Cavalry, and Pacific, kind of a mumble jumble of three teams in three different places.
Love it. And obviously, our stato guy, Gary Griffiths, is here again. So, Gary, who are you going to look after, bro?
I'm looking after Forge, Vancouver, and your Halifax Wanderers. And I'm slightly concerned for us tonight, you and I in particular, because we're going to be pronouncing a lot of names we don't usually pronounce, which might stretch us to the very limits of our capabilities. So, Chris, you might have to dip in and save us when we start saying some stupid
But the thing
things.
is, we try.
I've got one or
Exactly,
two
yeah.
names myself too that I've had to practice today. So,
Yeah.
Okay.
Owolabi Bellawoo. Owolabi Bellawoo.
There
Been
you go.
repeating it all day. Yeah.
I'm just not going to mention the people I don't know how to pronounce. I do have just a little bit of housekeeping that I wanted to just do real quickly. Where are we? Okay, so somebody, this is for you, Chris. So somebody posted on the Wanderers discussion page on Facebook today, and it's something I've never really thought about. What's the most kid-friendly sections of the grounds to go to?
Ooh,
And
that
what
is
is
a
it to do for the kids if they get bored with the game after 10 minutes?
That's a good question.
Isn't, sorry to jump in, isn't 401 dedicated to families? Or used to be, I think.
Yeah, that's behind
So
the other side.
the first one, yeah, like on the main stand, away from the kitchen.
Oh, 101, you mean? Or you mean
Oh,
the
sorry,
patio and
101, 101, yeah,
so yeah,
101.
sort of like originally, and this is just me trying to remember back to like 2019 and even forward to like 2021. 101 and 102 were kind of like the free tickets, if that makes any sense. So like it became more of a family-friendly section because that's where a lot of the clubs went to sit, away tickets, ticket requests, whether it was family, friends, girlfriends, you name it, right? They kind of went into 101 and 102. So just like the 102 crew, when Mike Campbell was down there, had a little more oomph to it. But I think over the years, it's kind of moved. Everything has moved closer to the kitchen. Like the fun rowdiness starts kind of on the far right side of 103, 104, all the way over to 109. In my opinion, mom being mom, she has sat everywhere in the stadium. And my son has been a fixture at Wanderers games pretty much since 2021. The best experience, believe it or not, would be behind the net where the patio seats are. Yeah, sort of opposite of where you sit, Anthony, or stand, I suppose, if you will. Because like you said, if the kids get bored, you can just leave the box setting behind. They've got little games for kids to play, whether it's kicking the ball at a target. They had a bubble machine there a couple times last year. They had face painting. It's not far from the kiosks where you can get your popcorn, good place to sell merch. They have their own kind of dedicated bathrooms as well, so you're not really waiting in the lineup. So it's a little more kid friendly if the little one has to go quicker. So from a non-seated standpoint, behind that opposite of the kitchen net, fantastic experiences all around. We've been there 3 or 4 times. Anthony, you came down with us during that rain game
That's
once with
awesome.
Ant. Yeah, and you don't get to see the full pitch like you want to. Guys like us want to see everything, but it's also at the same time a real fun experience because the kids want to be close. It's kind of like when you're at a hockey game and you're behind the net. You really can't see much, but for the kids, that's everything. And to me, that's a great experience. In terms of seating, 101, 102 are great. 103, 104, we have a lot of fun. We try to keep it, language laden, family friendly. Some people that aren't typically in our sections will come around and you'll hear more curse words. So it might not be the best place anymore, but
Those people stand at the back of 104 where at children as well. They swear at the children. There's a bunch of like English rowdies up there, so.
that's fantastic. But yeah, I would say also depends on the age of your kids. If you've got like a teenager, 109, 110 to experience that kitchen thing, but not actually be right in it. It's a good experience. I've heard horror shows of people bringing their kids to Section 107 because they're right next door and
Yeah,
they hear the
it's,
F's and the S's and
I know,
stuff.
it's
So,
not, yeah.
yeah. So, yeah, the Cliff Notes version, definitely behind the net opposite of the kitchen. And for seated experience, for the little ones, definitely 101, 102. And for your more teenage to adult kids, 109, 110 is fun to kind of get into that kitchen setting, but not be right in the mess.
I'm actually pretty sure that Sarah took her nephew once. And brought him to the kitchen.
Oh, no.
So he was swearing like a docker right after the game.
Oh, I
So
love it. I love it.
yeah, that's awesome. And just wanted to welcome Goals TV as part of the Down the Pub family. So it's a pretty cool platform if you haven't checked it out yet. Basically, it's just another platform where you can catch different football podcasts. So it's just dedicated to the soccer or football, and they have like rights to the USL. They've got the thing with Indy 11 down there, and there's just a bunch of guys that goes just talking about their favorite clubs and stuff like that. So as well, and please subscribe. So if you want to check it out, just go to goals.tv and give us a follow on there, and we'd appreciate it. All right, so that's my pitch out of the way, and it was very lackluster, I thought. We feel like going off goals on TV and giving subscribe, we appreciate it. So I thought we would kick it off. Chris, if you wanted to start off, and then Gary, you can do yours, and then I'll do the last two. And then we've got a couple of listener questions, and we have one anonymous question as well that we will touch upon. So yeah, let's go.
An anonymous question. That's
Yeah,
terrifying.
yeah.
Well, I'll start where I think everybody listening, aside from us Wanderer supporters, would want us to start, and that's in the nation's capital. I guess depending on what side of the fence you're on, whether you're an Ottawa supporter or a curious neutral or a supporter of one of the other seven clubs in the league, what they've done this offseason is both intrigued the most curious and active football minds, and it's also kind of, in a way, despite what our leader and commander in chief Derek Martin has told us, it's kind of, twisted the ideas in the head of the that it's insulting the concept of the salary cap. How is Ottawa able to build such a strong and deeper squad now, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks since Pints with Patrice? I wouldn't claim shenanigans per se. We've had these conversations privately. The conversations are now starting to leak publicly. I guess I'm not claiming shenanigans, but we've been chatting over the last 5 years about how has Forge kind of gotten away with this. And again, we're not totally out here accusing these teams of cheating or completely undercutting the salary cap per se, but it does make you wonder, in a league where guys don't get paid a significant amount of money, how are you able to compile this amount of talent and keep them and maintain them? In a world where we see athletes normally ask for more money on their second and third contracts and down the road, it's kind of hard to see how these teams can maintain it. But that being said, we've seen Ottawa over the last couple of years put the expectations on themselves. When they came into the league in 2020, obviously it was during the pandemic, and it was probably during a time where Ottawa weren't able to really dig into their advantages, if you will, away from the salary cap, where they weren't able to really attract players from both domestically and overseas with some of the incentives that they have to offer, be it from a technical aspect, be it from a infrastructural aspect. Their stadium and their training facility is fantastic. When they came into the league, even though it's a salary cap league, you knew that they were going to be a power player. And it took a year of their expectations being sky high, crashing off a cliff in the 90th minute, just about every game, it seemed, for them to say, okay, you know what? It's time for us to flex our muscles. And that's really what we've gotten this season. For lack of better terms, it's a super squad. For the very most part, these are some of the CPL's best players that have applied their talents at other clubs. Fernando Lopez listened to the fans. The fans demanded this. And of course, like I said, the expectations then go sky high. I'll get to that, you know, once I go through the players real quick. You've got De Brienne coming from Winnipeg, under 21 league player of the year. Balotelli's back after his brief stay in Turkey. You've got Twardek coming over from Ireland. You've got Abu Sissoko. You've got Ryan Leslie. You've got Kevin Dos Santos, Manny Aparicio, Luke Singh coming back on loan. Then you've got Amir Didic just so casually and so smoothly at a season ticket holder event being introduced to the crowd, something that we've already kind of speculated and seen discussed in the mediums over the last couple of months. But beyond the superstars and the talent they've been able to retain, like Tissot and Bassett and Ingham, they've got a great under 21 core as well, with both with Walker and Roy. Well, we're going to play a lot in that center back, right center back role. And Antonoro, who can play whether it's center mid, attacking mid, left mid, he's going to fit into that kind of interchange that is going to have to occur with this Ottawa team, because you've got three or four guys that are free roles, for lack of a better term, guys that can play multiple positions and guys that want to drift. So that's one of the big questions, is how are they going to set up structurally? That free roll ability is going to make things a challenge. I think this year there's probably more pressure on Carlos Gonzalez than any manager in the league, and that's including Tommy, who I'll get to when we speak about Cavalry. I think that if things go wrong, the easy thing to do and the easy thing to replace is the manager. And when you've got this much talent and you've got this much ability at your disposal, if you're anywhere less than second or third, I'd say come July or August, there's going to be some questions asked. And these supporters, they've shown and proven they're demanding, and ownership and leadership have shown that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is. So it's time for Gonzalez to step in. Looking at the personnel, 4-2-3-1 interests me. Gary might dive into that a little bit more once we kind of break the ice here with Ottawa. But, you know, it's a system that could be 4-3-3. They could play 3-5-2, but that also involves them getting more players in the back line, because they are a little bit, although Didic obviously kind of patches over those holes just a slight tiny bit. But like I said, that in itself, all the players, the incomings, it generates those expectations. My hot take when it comes to Ottawa, if this makes any sense, is that this should be looked at as a two-year thing. I think with every team, when you have an influx of players like this or a new manager, either or both, it's normally a two-year type of project. And I know Gonzalez isn't going to have that leash probably, but I think the supporters should look at the talent at the field and realize that both coaching and chemistry have to come together before you can start to anoint a team a champion and start to put those expectations on the players when they're struggling. So to summarize Ottawa, I think it's just going to come down to how fast are things going to click, and will the egos show up as well? I didn't really discuss that. You're going to have guys who would walk into any starting 11 in the league and play every minute for every other team fighting for positions on this club. So will that internal strife create something? Will guys lose match fitness if they're on the bench for three or four matches? It's going to be an interesting tale. And like I said, doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on, it's definitely going to be intriguing.
Yeah. I just wonder like what promises were given to people in terms of minutes and stuff like that. Because if I'm one of those guys and I'm moving there, like, you know, and look at the squad that they have, like, I'd be wanting like to know what my minutes would be like.
And I think that's the thing where the behind the scenes, under the table, quote unquote, if you will, you know, you look at a guy like Sissoko leaving Forge for Ottawa. You know, that was a big one for me, because he wasn't necessarily getting the minutes at Forge, but this year he was going to slot into their starting 11. So what does Ottawa have on the table for him, for example? You know, we've been talking about Ryan Yesley. Like, you were the starter, arguably the second or third best keeper in the league. You know, you're at an age where hopefully you're ambitious enough to make that next step in your career. You know, why are you going to Ottawa to be what we perceive as the backup? Like, what were you promised? You know, it's a very good point, Anthony, because like I said, there's you look at, you know, Dos Santos, De Brienne, and Tabla, for example, they can all play left attacking midfield. You know, only one of them can play fullback, but then you've got someone like Max Tissot who can play left back as well. So, You know what promises were made and what promises weren't made. You know, that's another part of it too. Like we talked about in the group, you know, as much as it sucks to see a team stack this much talent, maybe these guys are all taking pay cuts. Maybe these guys all just want to win and are willing to leave something on the table for the greater good of the squad. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at it, both pessimistically and optimistically. And I think every other team can kind of look at what Ottawa have done this year and see how they can implement it themselves. I've been saying to people both on Twitter and in person, Derek at Pints with Patrice definitely eased me off the cliff of the shenanigans happening, because if anybody's going to be upset, it's going to be one of the owners of the other teams. And if they get to see the checks and balances, if you will, then who are we to debate it? So it's just all about, like I said, the two C's, coaching and chemistry. I think Ottawa will be a dangerous team if those two things are working. If one of the two aren't clicking, it could be more of last year, despite how good this team is.
Just very quickly, a last thought on Ottawa.
Yeah.
I feel like how you view the business they've done depends on if you're an Ottawa fan or if you're a fan from outside the club, in the sense that I think if you're an Ottawa fan, you look at those high profile signings, especially Manny and Didic, and you see it as excellent work by the club, bringing in established players, eye-catching signings, building momentum in the city, etc., etc. I think if you're looking at it from outside of the club and you're trying to put a more pessimistic angle on it, right, let's get this absolutely straight. Like, Manny and Didic were shopping themselves around the league all off-season. They've been literally offering themselves to every club to see who will pay the most money for them, which is absolutely fine. That's what you do. The fact that Ottawa have bitten on that and agreed to pay them that money, that suggests to me there's going to be a financial hierarchy in that dressing room now. And as we all know, and as everyone listening knows, when you work within an organization, you know who's making the big money. So if you turn up on any day of the week and feel as though they are not giving as much effort as you are, or have some sort of kind of ego around themselves, you're going to complain about it, and that dressing room becomes toxic very, very quickly. So I think there's a real job on the hands of Carlos Gonzalez to manage that dressing room next season. And there's also a lot of pressure on him to produce a brand of football that Ottawa haven't traditionally produced, because it's easy to forget that fan base had turned on him towards the end of last season. And they're to a degree turned on Fernando as well. So how that's managed is going to be, it's going to be challenging for them. But yeah, that's just my thoughts on Ottawa. Do you want me to do Forge or Vancouver?
Yeah, buddy.
Start with Forge. I think traditionally Forge are quite slow starters, but I don't think they will be this year, because they've had the CONCACAF matches. I know it was a month ago, but they've still had that experience and they've been in training camp for a long time. So I fully expect them to start really strongly again. As a club, I've always liked them. I know most people don't, but I've always had a lot of respect for what they do. I think if you look at Forge's identity, you need to look at what colour they wear, and that's orange. And who does Bobby Smyrniotis admire the most? It's Johan Cruyff, and it's Netherlands, and it's total football in the 1970s. That's what he wants his team to be. Total football being players who are rotational, multi-positional, can play anywhere on the pitch, are raised to be a right back or a left back or a centre midfielder or a striker. They can play anywhere. And I think he's tried to instill that in how Forge play. And I was talking to Kev Anderson, friend of the pod, offline about this. And something he said was interesting, and I think it explains why Forge are so good in the playoffs. And he mentioned how Forge aren't so good during the regular season because Bobby is trying all these different looks and styles out on them throughout. And by doing this, they're going to slip up sometimes. But then by the time they get to the playoffs, they've got four or five tactical structures, and they can pick and choose whichever the one they want to use week, game by game in the playoffs. And a benefit of having a group that has largely stayed together over the last couple of years is that they all understand these different tactical looks and can plug and play anytime they need to. So I still think they're the best team in the league for that reason. And when they get to the playoffs, they'll be even better. It kind of feels like in the playoffs, it's like, I'm not a huge NFL fan, but I've been like trying to get to know it recently. And I can't remember, on one of the documentaries, they were talking about a team in the Super Bowl game, they used a random play that they'd devised in preseason 2 years previously, or something like that, and they just thought, oh, we could use this today. And it's a bit like that with Bobby and how Forge work, because they can plug and play.
The Philadelphia special.
Was that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, Nick Foles was the backup quarterback. So the play was never, ever supposed to ever be used at that stage. The Eagles' starting quarterback got hurt. So Foles was playing in the Super Bowl. And it was after a timeout. And he went over to his coach and he said, Philly special. And the coach has got a sheet this big with like 90 different plays on. And he's trying to pick what's the best play. And he looks over at him and he says, you know what? Why not? And to this day, for eternity, that play will be in the history books, will be on every like NFL film show because of that. 2 years prior, like you said in the practice, 2 years prior, when Foles was supposed to be the starter, this was supposed to be like that once a week play that they could pull out of the book that was never used. So it's kind of cool that you refer to that because that's a really good example.
Me Bobby's Hamilton special then one day. I think I do think a new look they added towards the end of last season and they used against Chivas is going to be this very kind of trendy thing that some big clubs are doing now, which is instead of playing with centre backs, playing sorry, instead of playing with full backs, playing with four centre backs. And the reason Forge have started to play with four centre backs is because, like us, they like to build in a 3-2 shape, but Forge now can do that by moving Ancinoti Johnson into centre midfield. So he starts as a centre back, but then he can move up a line and play in centre midfield with Orjapor. But this only works if you have two centre backs playing at full back, because then they can move centrally to form a back three. And the reason they do this is because the biggest benefit of Forge is most clubs only have one technical leader. So if you think about Halifax Wanderers, of course, our technical leader is Lorenzo Calegari. He sits in the middle of the pitch and dictates play. We get away with only having one technical leader like that because Lorenzo creates qualitative overloads. And what that means is instead of a numerical overload where you have two versus one, a qualitative overload comes when the player you have is so much better than the player that's marking them. And Lorenzo's better than anyone that tries to mark him, full stop. But with Forge, they have three. So say Hojiapur is playing as their central midfielder, their six. If, for example, we stick our striker on him and say, okay, sit on him so he can't do anything. For Forge, that's no problem because then Ancinoti Johnson just moves up a line and plays in centre midfield. Maybe they don't want to do that 1 week though. So when that's the case, Becker will just move back a line and play in central midfield. So they've always got a way of introducing a new technical leader into the side. And I think by playing with four centre backs, that's how they're going to achieve that. Only question mark I have about them to wrap up is I don't know who scores for them other than Campbell. I think he scored 10 or 11 goals last season. No one else really scored that many goals for them. So what kind of end product can Baddie Banger give them? What kind of end product can Chouinard give them? Player I absolutely love, by the way. And yeah, how many goals can they score outside of Jordan Campbell is the question I have. God, names, not Jordan Campbell. I've just
Terran Campbell.
amalgamated the two. Yeah, Terran Campbell. Yeah. And that is my Forge pitch.
Yeah, I think losing Casillas to BMNS Next Pro is a tough one to fill up because he was also a good person to bring in when they needed a goal, or he's a really good backup plan to Terran Campbell because Jordan Hampson really hasn't done it since he came back from Ireland. So yeah, I think this is the season when he's going to need to really step up and make his mark properly. So yeah, good job, Gar.
Do you want to do one, Ant?
Yeah, I'll do Valor.
Okay.
So I guess like the thing with Valor is it's not even about the squad this year, it's about the club itself. It's a story in a way because it just seems like that there's a lot of niggly issues between the club and the supporters. The supporters aren't quite happy with how the club is being run. The club just seem to do stuff that alienates the fans, and they really need to have a good season to try and bring everybody back together again. And I think that's fundamental thing they need to do. Obviously, there was the rumors floating around there about them being up for sale. I can't see the owners wanting to get rid of them this quickly, because I think they do bring a lot of value. But I think part of the problem is the stadium isn't fit for what they need. It's just the wrong stadium for the fan base that they have right now. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens during the course of the season. And I think that if they start off poorly, things are probably going to get pretty ugly pretty quickly. And when you look at the squad, they've lost like a lot of big names. Like there's a huge overhaul again on there. Like there's what, 1, 2, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, like 15 or 16 players who have left. That's massive. Like that was like us last year. And like, we went the first 8 games, wherever it was, we were win. And people here were being a little bit kind of pissy. And I feel like the atmosphere in Winnipeg is a lot worse than what it was in Halifax. Just from the stuff you see online, with that the fans and the social media people are interacting, it just doesn't seem like a happy home. But any team that's going to lose, like Andrew Vaccaro, Yezdi, Andrew John Baptiste, like he would have been massive around the club just for in terms of like just his personality and his leadership. So losing him is a big one to fill. Diego Gutierrez, like I mean, where's the that's a massive like where's the skill in midfield going to come from? They brought in Noah Verhoeven and that like and Jordan Freer, but I don't even know if they're going to be good enough to fill the shoes. And one of their top players I talked from last year, like Niang Gebera, who was he's really skillful and he caused a lot of teams a lot of problems, and he's gone. So it's just seeing where the goals are going to come from. They brought in Sean Hundle, who is a handful, but outside of him, everything just looks threadbare. I've been kind of talking to somebody on the inside there, and said they've been looking really well, really sharp in pre-season. They're in Portugal. They've had a couple of games, and everybody kind of looks good. Like the systems are trying to do, everything's kind of coming on board. And I feel like they're obviously going to say that because they have to. You know what I mean? So it's like how you kind of just read into that. But I just think that it's going to be really difficult for Phil DeSantis because he came in, take over from Rob Gale, and Rob Gale's record wasn't the greatest, and Philip DeSantis isn't much better. Yeah, I don't think the product has changed too much, and the results haven't changed that much either. So it's a big year for him. He's just finished his pro license, which is great news for him. But I'd be interested to see if he's still the coach at the end of the season. Special shout out to the Force Ever Wanderers, Zach Secunda, being back in the league, and I think he will. I think that's a good sign. I think he was good enough to stay at the Wanderers, I think, when he was here, and he definitely like has progressed a lot since he went to Europe. So I think that was a big move from them. Yeah. So I think personally, I think they're going to struggle again this year.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point about if things start to go south. I know you said it seems kind of surprising that the ownership would put them out on the market, but I've actually kind of over the last couple of days with the rumors about Valor and Pacific, however unfounded they ended up being in the end, looking at how successful it appears, at least from the outside looking in, York's transition was. And that there is this type of interest when you look at the last three clubs that have come in, Ottawa, multi-billionaire investment, Vancouver, proven they can do it with Pacific. Let's do it again with a new club. And then you look at now with York, of course, things still have to materialize, but it seems like there's a brighter future on the horizon for the club, much brighter than it was last year. So while I do agree with you, Anthony, that it is a bit of a surprise, why would you want to dump something this quickly? On the contrary, they may see this as kind of their exit, if you will, from the soccer market. I know that they're doing the renovations to IG Field, which is why they're on the road to start for the first little bit. And it seems like there's a real pull to try to maintain this positivity that they have with the CFL franchise, something that they haven't had for a long time in its consistency. So it almost feels like Valor is getting lost in all of this. And you hope that rather than them getting lost in all of this, that ownership sees what they have as an entity. And even if they run it at a loss, which they have publicly displayed, unfortunately, for the last 5 years, it's something that is still going to draw people to a greater product, which is the field, the stadium, the operation that they're in charge of. But so I see where you're coming from 100%. Like, it seems like, why would they dump now? But at the same time, they may see it as, if we don't do this now, we may not ever be able to do this. So, yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of stuff happening off the field, just as much as what's happening on the field. So it's definitely going to be one to kind of keep an eye on for all those people who love a good rumor and a good drama story in the CPL. Gary Griffiths. Marcus, who have you got next, bud?
I'll do Cavalry next. You know, they're similar to us in a sense where they didn't do a whole lot in the transfer market. We did more, obviously, here in Halifax. But I feel like in Cavalry's sense, what they added was just kind of filling in the cracks of some of the periphery players that they've lost. Their core is still there, and a lot similar to us, the players that they've retained kind of feels like a new signing to an extent. Tommy has always been a manager of continuity. Tommy has always been a manager of consistency. That's why they were, when you look at the totality of last year, the best team in the league. Tommy really puts an emphasis on the regular season. They treated that regular season title like it was the title to win. And I had no problem with that. In terms of footballing heritage, that is the best team. It's the team that over the totality of the season has the most points through the basis of head-to-head that every other team has. The playoffs is a North American thing. It's something that has kind of translated to the sport through the North American game, MLS being the spearhead. And you see it in other leagues with, you know, relegation, promotion playoffs and stuff like that. Some of the best football you'll ever watch is the championship playoffs, because you think about the amount of money that those clubs are playing for and you know, some of those support bases, like watching Luton last year make that run to the Premier League was absolute magic. And it's because you think about where they were even just a decade ago, struggling, if you will. I think they were in League Two. You know, that's what it's all about. So, you know, to see that Tommy kind of put the emphasis on the regular season title, it was good for the league, because I think the league also kind of leaned into it. Like, the league obviously wants to promote and push the playoff battle, and they did a pretty good job with it last year. But I think they also got lucky in the fact that there was a lot of parity from positions 2 to 6. Cavalry ran away with it last year, and I think a lot of people forget that. Again, like I said, a lot of guys coming back, a lot of continuity, that core is still there. Keeping the guys that kind of popped onto the scene last year, especially Eric Kobza, for example, somebody I figured was gone in 2 minutes. The fact that they've been able to keep Klomp for another year is extraordinary. I figured Carducci would try to move on by now. There were some rumors about him taking a shot at Europe. He's coming back. And, you know, whether you think he's the best keeper or not, he is the leader of that team, and he has been the voice of that team from day one. So running it back for Cavalry, why not? I talked about filling in the periphery of the squad, but two big pieces that they've added. Lucas Diaz has a high pedigree, a high quality, and finally provides Cavalry with an attack more centrally than they've had over the last couple of years. And, you know, you mentioned him with your chat about Valor there, Anthony. Diego Gutierrez, I've said this in the chat and I've said this to many friends, he could quietly be the signing of the season. And he's the perfect type of player for Tommy. He's got the work rate of an Escalante. He's got the eye of a Ben Fisk, who is now gone. So he replaces kind of that periphery there as well. But he's also a guy that can give you two-way play. And Cavalry has been the type of club from day one where if you're on that pitch, all 10 men in the outfield, they're working hard. My question obviously was the attack. Is the attack going to be able to follow up what they did last year? Cavalry have never been an explosive team in their attack, but they showed last year that they could do it in bunches. The front three attacking trio kind of triangle of Akio, Bevan, and Musi, they don't really have anybody clipping at their heels anymore. So bringing in Malcolm Shaw today was a real shrewd move, I thought. As well as I think they got Thomas Warchevsky as well, former FC Edmonton player, and he's proven time and time again that he can step up when the time when it's needed. So to me, Cavalry, they're gambling in a way on running it back. You know, with Ottawa, I was talking about, and I didn't really mention it, but I was talking about how there's a league familiarity when you keep things current, when you keep things consistent. Other teams have that film then, so they can adjust to how you play. It's going to be really interesting to see how teams adjust to Cavalry this year. I think it took Forge at the end, which is what Gary was talking about with Bobby. Forge in the end had that plan and had that system to frustrate Cavalry that seven other or six other teams didn't have last year. So, what did Forge do during the playoffs against Cavalry to kind of unsettle them? And I think that'll be the model. And you know, it's funny, I have the three managers I feel like have the most pressure on them. I do know Dos Santos with Valor has a little bit of pressure on him as well. But you know, the beginning of last season, because the season ended so positively, obviously with the trophy, a lot of people forget at the start of last season, Cavalry fans, you know, even if it was a small minority, they were pretty vocal about maybe wanting or needing a change, saying that Tommy's ideas were getting a little bit stale, saying he wasn't getting the best out of some of the players. So I do think that there might still be a touch of pressure on Tommy because even though Cavalry, aside from Forge, have been the most consistent team for these first five seasons of the league's history, having that season-ending victory, that season-ending success, that euphoria of climbing the mountain, I think that the Cavalry group, the supporters, as well as the internals, the owners, and well, I mean, Tommy's basically the runner of the club, so himself. I think they kind of want that feeling because they've watched Forge have that feeling on the other end 4 out of the 5 years. So I think the pressure's on a little bit more than it appears for Cavalry. And I think, you know, as it's been over the last few years, they will be there and around at the end.
I definitely think that the signings that they've made were astute. And you know, if they can get Willie Akio back playing the way we all know he can, I think they'll be there or thereabouts again. And my friend Dave, who runs Everton Nova Scotia, is pretty excited that they have a an Everton player on loan there, a goalkeeper. So yeah. So I think that keeps them happy these days as brand shit like that, so
No, I think they'll be right up there again. Consistency is really important with them. Diego Gutierrez would have been my dream Wanderers off-season signing, more so than Manny Aparicio, honestly. I think he's a wonderful player who would fit right in with what we try to do. And when I saw that they were signing him, I still think it's them and Forge for all Ottawa have done. I think Cavalry and Forge, that's the standard still.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, Cavalry were smart. Let me look this real quick before we move on. They signed him early. Yeah, literally the turn of the new year, January 2nd. So, you know, you said it. For myself, like I didn't have Manny as high on my list just because I felt like we had those type. Obviously, Manny walks into the starting 11. Everybody wants Manny in their team. But Diego has the attributes and the qualities I felt like would have fit perfectly into Patrice's system even more. I totally agree with you, Gary. I remember our good friend Carlos Benitez, the exact same thing. Like he posted a bunch of sad crying faces when he went to Cavalry because it's like, damn, why didn't we think of him going there? We were so focused on him coming to us. Maybe he was going to go to Ottawa before we knew where they were putting the Avengers together. Like he had a lot of different places that he could fit, but nobody really thought about Cavalry. And then the more you look at it and the more you dig in, the more it makes a ton of sense. And like I said, could be quietly the signing of the season for sure.
I agree.
You go, Gary. I think you did your.
I'll be quick with
No,
Vancouver.
you don't have to be.
No,
Take
I'll be
your
quick because my notes are short.
time.
My thing with Vancouver, I guess my big takeaway is if Ottawa hadn't done what Ottawa have done, there would be a big bright light shining on Vancouver FC and the players they've brought in starting from the summer, not only in this off season. I don't think people realize how strong they are, not just from a starting 11 perspective, but from a depth perspective as well. Like if you transported that entire squad into Cavalry or Forge, they would be one of the favorites to win the league. But because those players aren't attached to a name, or like a club name that we recognize as one of the big hitters, I think it's f flying under the radar a little bit. David Norman, Romeo, Harris G, James Cameron, Caden Chung, Elliot Simmons, Gabby Bitar, Alejandro Diaz, Moses Dyer, and Renan Garcia as well. Like, this is a player who under 10 years ago was smashing in a 30-yarder against Inter Milan at the San Siro for Sampdoria. Like, he's 36, 37 now, but he's no joke. Like, he changed that team when he joined them last season. He's a fantastic player. So they've got some huge names and they've got so much depth as well. If you go through their team, like it looks like they're even signing Nico as well. Nico, your mate, and yeah.
It does
So
appear that
if
way, yeah.
yeah, Callum Irvin and him as goalkeepers, like that's not a number one and number two, that's two number ones. Callum Irvin, I've always kind of had question marks about him with the ball at his feet. I think Nico's a little bit better. So if they do bring in a goalkeeper who can play out from the back, then they're going to be even stronger. In defense, you've got like Romeo and Norman as your centre backs, Paris G and Caden Chung as your full backs. And then kind of understudy to both full backs can be James Cameron, who is such an exciting player. Like he's one of those players who is just so positive, so athletic, so forward thinking. You can tell he used to be a winger before they converted him into a fullback. And I imagine he'll end up as a winger again at some point because I've just never seen a player as direct as him and as fearless as him at his age. He's still raw, as most 18, 19-year-olds are, but very, very good talent. And yeah, I'm just very excited to see him again. In midfield, you've got Simmons and Renan Garcia. You've also got Gabby Bitar. And up front, Ben Fisk, fantastic sign-in, proven at CPL level. Alejandro Diaz, who wasn't great last season, but I think everyone knows how good he can be. And Moses Dyer, who scored a lot of goals at this level as well. So they're just stacked in depth. My big question mark with them is the coach reminds me a little bit of Steven Hart in the sense that he's a little bit more old school. Like this modern breed of coach, like your Patrices and your Bobbies, they're very in the nicest possible way, they're control freaks. They're tactically the biggest nerd you've ever met and like to control what everyone does and where everyone goes on the pitch. But then you've got another era of coaches like your Steven Harts, like your Gottbys, who I feel like they set up teams in a very, very basic way. And they're strong believers that talent is all that really matters rather than being too tactically in depth. And I think it can work because you look at Carlo Ancelotti at Real Madrid. That's essentially what he's done. He assembles a group of incredibly talented players and lets them play and trusts them. And I feel like Gottby is one of those coaches as well. There's a guy who posts on Reddit quite a lot on the Campiel subreddit, and he always does really, really interesting posts. But he clearly had someone inside the Vancouver camp last year, whether he's an agent to a player, whether he had a family member in the camp. He would always post about the lack of tactical preparation that Gottby did with the players throughout the week and how it would get to match day and the players would have no real idea what the tactical expectations were for them. It was just kind of like a, okay, you get out there and play. So I do think there are limitations to someone like him, especially in a league which is maturing very, very quickly from a tactical perspective. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. How does he kind of rise to meet the tactical challenges, or does he just rely on the players he's got? And he really does have a good collection of players, so that might not be the worst plan.
I think it was Sandoval, the lad who left. He came, saw, conquered, and left. Somebody was saying that he, like you said, maybe it was him, maybe it was an agent, maybe it was a friend. But there seems to be some writing between the lines, if you will, that it was him because they did play much better football after he left. And I think it was because maybe the focus wasn't quite on him. And again, I'm just throwing out hearsay. I'm definitely not confirming or denying or saying any of this stuff, but I do remember there being a little more information, if you will, about Vancouver scattered amongst the Reddit boards, and they seemed to kind of go away once one Sandoval was gone. So
Yeah, it might have been an agent or a family member of him then. Yeah.
yeah, I think it's plain to see that Gary hates any kind of older coaches. So
No, not at all,
yeah,
mate. Not at
well,
all.
it sounds like it to me, man.
I said there's value in it. It's just a different way of
No.
doing
You
things.
said old dinosaurs like Stephen Hart and Guthrie. So,
Mate, I love Hart. I love Steven Hart. Leave that
no,
out.
it is kind of funny. It is kind of cool to see that kind of that cultural war almost. It's the same like with Jose. Like, I mean, he's obviously he's from a different era to what we have now as well. Like in with the top managers, and just seeing him trying to compete with that is it's very, very interesting. So,
And it's really intriguing too, because Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken, they're signing babies, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. So like it's kind like you said, the culture clash. Like Guthrie seems like he is that old school style manager. You hear him in the press conferences. I remember before I even knew who he was, just looking up one of his press conferences on YouTube. It was like an 8-minute rant on YouTube of him just going off on the referee, going off on the like he seems like just I'm not trying to be rude, a little bit senile, a little bit cold, a little bit like
Mate, he reminds me of a mafia boss. He's got that kind of like, where are the bodies buried? So it's intriguing to me to see them. You know, I would gauge they've got, and you know, this is just off the top of my head. I could probably just look at the list, but like they've probably got like three or four of the five youngest players in the league. Tahid is, I think, only 16. You were just talking about Cameron. He's 17 or 18. They've got another 17 or 18-year-old. Anthony White, I think, is only 18 or 19. I think he's
Grady,
just turned 20, yeah.
Grady McDonald.
Yeah, that's the young Irish fella. How old's he?
2008, so what, 16, something like
Goodness gracious.
that.
So there you go. So it's intriguing to see that there's something there that these young players are at least driven and directed to, because they could sign anywhere in reality. So
Good job, Gar. So my last one is York. They've kind of it's been a kind of strange off season for them. I think these guys are going to be the dark horses this year. I think since everything's been kind of sorted out, like with the ownership situation last year, it just seems like there was a sword of Damocles was hanging over their head the whole time, and they have to be careful about everything they were doing. And then from Mexico came the saviors who swooped in and rescued the club from the brink, and they seem to know what they're doing, and they seem to be like willing to put their money where their mouth is. So they brought in some pretty decent players. So I know they've lost a couple of good players. Like, I mean, they've lost, like, last year the top scorer was 6 goals, so their goals are very plentiful and they were kind of shared out. But they are going to miss Ozzie De Rosario. I think that's a big one for them to lose. Obviously, Roger Thompson retiring, as we mentioned earlier on, Nico moving on, and Kevin DeSantos, I think, was a big loss for them. Jeremy Cummins back to Halifax. I think his time was kind of blighted with injury last year, so I think that isn't as big of a loss as probably people might think. But they brought in some really good players too. Like, they brought in Frank Sturing, who's a really, really good player. He's a Canadian international. Juan Cordova. They've brought in a Liechtenstein international, which is pretty cool. Dennis Salanovic, I'm hoping to say that right. So it's going to be interesting to see, because you know, I hate like kind of saying that managers are have to be kind of looking over their shoulder a little bit, but I think we're all surprised that Martin Nash kept his job. Because normally when new owners come in, the first thing they want to do is bring their own guy to with their own ideas. So the fact they're giving them another go, I think it's a good sign. So it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of plays out from this year, because they were so hit and miss again like last year. Like some games were awesome. Like when it came to Halifax, they were really good, and then other games just never showed up. So it's kind of like it seems to be an ongoing thing with them. But I think that if they can keep Mo Bouboule like fit and also on the pitch, I think they will definitely be a team to be reckoned with. And I think they're going to be this year's dark horses, because I just think that with the amount of stuff that happened last year, over the ownership thing and people not knowing whether they're going to have a job at the end of the season, all that's been kind of cleared up, and I think people just feel happy with the new ownership. I talked to somebody on the inside there too, and they're really happy with the way how the squad is looking, and they're also really happy with how the club's being run. So it's definitely going to be an interesting season in York. I just wonder, I know we always kind of talk about attendances and all that kind of stuff, but with the new owners, and obviously they brought in two or three kind of bigger name Mexicans into the squad too, if that'll start driving some more numbers to games and stuff like that, or how they're going to eventually try and work out how to get bums on seats in York. So
It would be fascinating for you to have Angus on the show again, Anthony, now that he's gone, because he would be the guy whose brain to pick, like, what were the challenges? What do these guys have to do? You know, and I don't think Angus is the type of person that would come on the show with like a chip on his shoulder, try to leave all these guys have the work. You know what I mean? He's a
I
real
think he
sweet
knows
guy.
that. I think he knows like the way the business is. What he's been in the business long enough to know like that. You kind of take the rough of the smooth, and I think he's pretty happy with his record of what he did at York. So I don't
Yeah,
think
man,
he.
people who criticize him, I say the club survived. And you know, it's easy to look at all the negatives that happened over the last 5 years, attendance being the most paramount one, of course. But like Chris Snow played for them, and Chris Snow said, "I can't tell you enough how much I love that fan base. Even though it's small, even though it's mostly quiet, it's there. There's something there." And Angus was able to tap into that enough just to keep it afloat. Of course, you know, by the end, it could have sank, but he did something and showed something and proved something that these guys are taking a chance on it now. So, you know, people who negate or say that his work was a failure, the club survived. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's a success beyond. And I'm glad that he feels that way. I hope he does, for sure, at least.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
And he's also responsible for creating some of the nicest football kits I've ever seen in my life. Quite frankly, this season's are gorgeous. And I know that's got his touch all over it. So.
I think Balor released their kits tonight, I think. So I think that's the last of them. So I wanted to have him on the show to kind of run his eyes over the kits and kind of rank them. So I'm pretty sure we'll probably do that show next week or two. So we'll have
Sweet.
him on the show. So who's next, Gary?
I'm going to call an audible here because I was going to do Wanderers, but
I did see the message.
I feel like we should do an episode on them when we all get to speak about them, because we're already going quite long and I feel like that might end up being another half an hour or so. So maybe next week we can do a Wanderers deep dive and predictions for
Okay,
the
cool.
season.
So Chris, who do you got left? Got
Yeah, that
anybody left?
just I think that leaves us with Pacific, and that's about it.
Yeah, go for
And
it,
like I said off the air with Pacific, they could finish second. They could finish seventh or eighth. It's a really weird off season. Like, you can just be blunt and say, you lost Manny, you lost Didich, they went to Ottawa, flip the page. There's no other way to look at it. You know, I said I have the three most under pressure managers. I think James Merriman, you know, he really held on by the skin of his teeth last year. You know, I like I said, Cavalry ran away with it, but people do forget that part too, that Pacific were the spear, if you will, for the first couple of months of the season. They were the team that appeared to be running away with it, and they almost crashed and burned to the point that they missed the playoffs. It was them or Ottawa, two disappointments, more or less fighting for the end. And York almost upset them both in the end, as it was. That's the biggest question for me for Pacific, and honestly, for all eight teams coming into this season, is what Pacific are we going to see? A deep dive into the roster, there's a lot of holes. And to me, looking at who they've signed and what positions that players have been signed in, it almost kind of feels like their business isn't done yet. And if I'm a Pacific supporter, I'm a bit panicky. Some listeners, Pacific supporters, might think that I'm just saying this tongue in cheek because of how the season ended last year. Oh, Chris is just trying to say. But to me, if any team, and I include Valor in this, should be feeling a bit hollow right now, it might be them. Obviously, losing top talent to other teams in the league hurts. There's no question about that, but they still have their core. Being able to keep Salouf, for example, is huge. TMG's back. Data Luke is back. Data Luke. but, you know, I saw how the business seemed delayed. Even players getting released, like Kakuta Mane was just released, what, last week or the week before? And it seemed like he was returning. We heard some rumors about maybe Didich was going to come back, and the fact that he didn't come back after the move to Norway failed speaks volumes to me as well. They've got, Hurd, they've got Young, they've got, the heart, the core and the soul of what Pacific has been over the last couple of years, but I'm not looking at anything that they've brought in as anything to really get excited about. So I honestly and truthfully, and, maybe a Pacific fan will listen to this and have a rant for me. I want that. I want to know what it is that you guys are excited about. I want to know what it is that you guys have seen or heard about the club so far, because I really haven't heard or seen much. It just feels like a team that's kind of stuck in a weird purgatory that maybe tried to sign a few of these guys that ended up in Ottawa, that ended up in Halifax. Maybe they thought that because of what they've been able to provide over the last 5 years, the infrastructure they have, they've got a good support base. The club seems to be well run and well respected in the community. That maybe that they were going to be able to just say, hey, come to Pacific, and guys would come, as they've done over the last few years. But it feels like maybe they've missed out and lost out on a few signings, and now they're in a bit of a scramble mode. Like with Ottawa, my hot take was that this might be a 2-year thing. With Pacific, my hot take is that they might finish eighth. I don't see what's there right now to me that says that they're better than Vancouver or Valor, let alone the other five teams that I personally think are better than them at the moment. I could be eating my words. Like I said, could be second, could be eighth. There's always something about Pacific that they're still there when it counts and when it matters. And we saw that last year. They nearly went on a miracle run in the playoffs to a championship. They were a couple of bumps away in that semifinal from actually making it to the final. So when you look at the history of the club and James Merriman's track record, to his respect, there must be a plan. It's just, to me, taking a little bit too long for me to be optimistic about them. And I hope Pacific fans are ready for a long season.
Yeah. It has been a weird off season for them, hasn't it? Like, I still feel like they still haven't recovered from getting rid of Taron Campbell and Ajibola to Forge. And now with those, what a stalwart that they had not been around anymore. It's going to be very interesting to see how their system kind of plans out.
I fear for them. I agree with everything Chris said. I think they're going to really struggle. And the most daunting aspect for them is, I think because there has been a lot of turnaround, they're not going to start the season too well, which for them is terminal because they play six of their first seven games at home. I think it's seven of their first nine at home because of the weird way the weather here works. So if they historically have relied on starting really, really strong, they're always top at the start of the summer, aren't they? Because they've played so many home games. If they don't repeat that trick, then when they kind of get towards the end of the season and they have seven out of eight away games, they could really struggle. So yeah, I don't have them making the playoffs, but we'll get to that when we do the prediction episode.
So we're going to do the Wanderers. But as Gary said, it's probably a good idea for us to do a full episode on the Wanderers. Mm-hmm. And
for sure,
the questions that we got online were pretty much all wanderers, right? Anyway, so we'll hold them over, apart from one from our good friend Guy Incognito. Would you take would you take Didich over Nimic?
Oh damn.
I would not,
I'm
mainly
gonna
because of age profile. Didic is 29, turning 30, Nimic's 23. Think about sell on value, think about see, like Didic has reached his ceiling. He is as good as he'll ever be. Nimic, that story has yet to be written. He could be an MLS player in the next year or two with a big sell on value. So personally, I'm choosing Nimic, and that's not even being partisan.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I had to think about it. And I'm sorry, Dan Nimic for mayor 2024. The other part to me is the obvious too. Tactically, it seems like Dan is such an intricate part of what Patrice wants to do. Didich is not the worst ball playing defender, but he doesn't provide what Dan Nimic does. And I feel like now that we've seen what Nimic does for us, it would be hard for me to replace him with Didich. Now, if I was starting a club, I might lean towards Didich because you automatically have a triple threat with him. Solid defender, solid leader, set piece, maestro. So, you know, again, Nimic, and I guess Nimic is kind of that to an extent too. I'm burying myself on this one. I think it's Nimic. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know what? It's Nimic. It's Nimic. I think it's Nimic.
I think after seeing Dan Nimic clear the posts in the American football stadium today, they could only be one
50.
winner for
It's
me.
gotta be
Yeah,
him, yeah.
50 yards.
Yeah,
Yeah, it was
50.
pretty special. So
He's our Yorkshire gold.
I think that's I think that if you look on paper, I kind of get where Chris is coming from because like he did just score a goal and he's solid. But when you kind of look back and you kind of look at the way Nimic is such an integral part of the way that he sets up and the way she plays, I'd have Nimic every day of the week. So hopefully that answers your question there, Guy Incognito. And yeah, boys, thanks for doing all the research. I really appreciate it.
It was
And
fun, yeah.
yeah, not often you get to do homework, so I'm glad the dog didn't need it. So that's awesome. So yeah, so watch out for the new episode. It'll be up on the usual platforms and on goals.tv.
Woohoo!
Yeah, thanks, boys. Talk to you
Thanks,
soon.
mate. Bye bye.
Cheers, brother.
Folks, please. Right foot, please. Time to drink up, folks. Get out. Out to box.